All right. Good morning, everybody. Today is Friday. Yay, it's Friday, March 30th, 2018. And this is Before the First Cup with Jules here on UCY.TV. Happy Friday, everyone. It is a chilly 38 degrees, gray, and kind of drizzling here in upstate New York. But I do have to say, the very last little tiny bit of snow is just about gone in my backyard. So I'm pretty happy about that. So where we leave off on Wednesday, we titled the show Biocontrol, Nanosensors, AI, DARPA, Brains, and Mind Driving. And I actually edited that title after I had published the show. It had been B2V, Brain to Vehicle Driving, but Mind Driving was more descriptive. We talked about a lot of crazy things, DARPA, and this is kind of where we're going to kick it off again today. DARPA had released an RFP, I believe. They had a program listed out on their website called Control Systems in Biology, and they were looking at controlling from the very miniature nano scale all the way up to entire populations of organisms. Now, of course, they could tell you that they're things such as mosquitoes or planaria or something like that, or mice. But remember, they have been doing lots and lots of research in how to manipulate the brain, how to remotely control biological organisms, and that isn't going to stop. So this was quite a surprise to me that they were pushing it forward to be able to use closed loop control of biological systems with implants of some kind, typically nanosensors. They're going to put nanosensors all over the planet, but how are they going to connect these things together? Well, this is where we're going to kind of roll into this one. Came across a few interesting stories, I would say probably last week. First one, this was a couple days ago, March 27th, 2018. Boeing venture capitalist arm backs Internet of Things nanosatellite business. Oh, we talked about those little nanosatellites before, those CubeSats that are just a few centimeters by centimeters, and they could do them in entire constellations in the sky to be able to connect everything. Boeing's venture capital arm has invested in Myriota, which is a nanosatellite technology startup in Australia that focuses on Internet of Things connectivity in remote locations. Oh, you mean like in the savannas of Africa? I don't know. Well, this is the first investment of Boeing's Horizon X venture, and it is made in the company outside the U.S. And since the 10th of April of last year, the terms of the investment were undisclosed, but Myriota raised $15 million in Series A funding, blah, blah, blah. Their technology enables two-way communication, two-way, not just one-way, not just sending data out, but sending commands in. Two-way communications between ground-based microtransmitters and nanosatellites in low Earth orbit to securely share data over narrow bandwidths. Founded in 2015, Myriota envisions its system for usage in the defense sector, of course it does, along with potential applications in logistics, agriculture, environmental, and maritime industries where traditional IoT network connections can be difficult. And we're going to look at some strange maritime industry with building sensors that DARPA is working on. It was pretty frightening. We formed Myriota to solve major connectivity problems. Hundreds of millions of devices out there surveilling everything on the planet that need to communicate but do not have a cost-effective, battery-friendly network to do so. Myriota's technology influences how we think about space-based communications and connectivity in remote locations, so we can bag, tag, and track you anywhere. Boeing started Horizon X to invest in companies that specialize in technologies for areas such as autonomous systems, energy storage, advanced materials, augmented reality systems and software, machine learning, and hybrid electric propulsion. And that would be for things such as self-driving cars. All right, so then there was an update. SpaceX, Elon Musk's space company, has been doing a whole bunch of launches from Vandenberg Air Force Base. And I had looked at one point, I'm pretty certain that they are connected to the Space Command section of our military as well. So SpaceX was working on their fifth launch, and it is now on track for today, which I don't know if it took off, but it was listed as 7:13 a.m. Friday. The primary mission of the launch is to send the fifth set of 10 Iridium Next satellites into orbit. And we've read about these before. They are making the biggest upgrade in the sky we have ever seen. We are having an issue with one of the 10 satellites, so we are going to postpone it because it was supposed to take off Tuesday, but then they said it was going to be Friday. According to Iridium, the next satellites will replace the world's largest commercial network of low Earth orbiting satellites in what will be one of the largest tech upgrades in history. Ding, ding. Iridium, which bills itself as one of the only mobile voice and data satellite communication networks that span the entire globe, partnered with Thales Alenia Space for the manufacturing, assembling, and testing 81 Iridium Next satellites. At least 75 are which to be slated to be carried to space by SpaceX over a span of 8 total launches. So there you have it. And what's even better, here's the next one. March 26, 2018, as the industry launches new products, the military cannot decide what to buy. Oh, what a problem to have. The latest Pentagon review of how the U.S. military should buy space communications is expected to wrap up in the coming weeks. And the likely conclusion is that the military needs a mix of government-owned satellites as well as commercial services. Now, we've seen in shows in the past where Elon Musk and SpaceX are leasing space from NASA, and they got all kinds of funding, and they were given facilities and people, staff to use to help get their program off the ground. There's been taxpayer dollars going into a lot of this. There is not much clarity or consensus, however, on how the Department of Defense and the military services should go about buying services from the private sectors at a time when the market is offering more choices and competitive pricing than ever before. The problem is a military culture that wants to buy hardware the old-fashioned way and fears change, they say. Institutions are not fit for the needs that we have today. The Air Force has an office that buys wideband satellites, but you don't need to do that anymore. You can buy them as a service. Everything is as a service now. SATCOM services are the responsibility of the Defense Information Systems Agency and are an entirely different organization with a separate chain of command and budget. So when your organization is fractured like that, it is hard to make good decisions and trade-offs. That's why we see the military struggling. Space communications is just one area where the Pentagon is paralyzed by indecision. This is a problem seen across most space programs, says Fred Kennedy, director of the Defense Advanced Research Projects Agency's Tactical Technology Office. DARPA is looking to shake up the established order with a new program called Blackjack. That seeks to bring commercial space technologies into the military. There is a fear of change at the Pentagon that puts us in a kind of a frightening place of risk aversion. We are paralyzed by the thought of moving to a new architecture. But with Blackjack, we are going to go marry up with the commercial sector and suck more into the machine with our slimy tentacles. And among the hot technologies are, oh, guess it, new low Earth orbiting constellations, maybe like those little microsatellites. Kennedy would like to see the military adopt some of the business ethos of the space industry that mass produces satellites and doesn't test, check, and review everything until the cows come home. We have to get out of that mode. Kennedy hopes to see the Blackjack program influence not only how the military buys services, but how it builds its own constellations. And the Air Force is participating as well. I wonder if it was Vandenberg. Well, we figure out how to service the warfighter directly, and there has to be a more commercial leverage. That means that the government has to sign up deals with up-and-coming satellite service providers everywhere. And if we don't get in early, these folks are going to march off their commercial customer requirements, and we'll never get our hooks in. Like I said, slimy tentacles. Those hooks are the military capabilities that commercial companies may not be thinking about as they build their systems, right? Like how to seek and destroy. But it'll be more helpful to do now that as constellations are being developed, says Kennedy. DARPA's interest in small satellite services reflect a growing consensus that these constellations are better positioned than large geosynchronous orbit spacecraft to survive enemy attacks in a future war. Right, future space war. It is known quality, and everyone understands geosynchronous satellites, but as a result, it doesn't have the benefit of sanctuary it once had. We have to decide, do we want to continue to play there, or do we want to look for other alternatives? And I think the answer is probably both. DARPA has $10 million in the 2018 budget for Blackjack, and it is requesting $15 million for 2019. The demonstrations are planned for 2021, and we can show that we can leverage commercial constellations and provide real capabilities to the warfighter. According to industry sources, companies likely to compete in the Blackjack program are, oh, you guessed it, Iridium, the ones that SpaceX is launching from the Vandenberg Air Force Base, as well as SpaceX, Telesat, and LeoSat. Former Assistant Secretary of Defense for Space Policy, Doug Levero, said the most worrisome threat to satellites is jamming. Everyone worries about cyber attacks, but these are harder to pull off than simply jamming signals. That can be done by almost anybody. Wink. Some guy in the middle of a field with a TV truck can do the jamming, he says at a Defense One conference March 14th. Satellites are in geosynchronous orbit mostly for convenience, and you launch as few satellites as you can, putting them into geosynchronous orbit and communicating with each other. And the four satellites I have can cover the Earth, and it just doesn't happen to be a very good place to fight from. Levero recalled that, I mean, they're talking about doing space wars. Levero recalled the classified military communication constellation known as AEF, A-E-H-F, and it was originally designed to be inclined orbits where satellites would be safe from attack. But after the Cold War ended, we thought we wouldn't it be more convenient and cheaper to put them into geosynchronous orbits? Yes, but not the militarily wise thing to do. So they can't be jammed easily, and you can only see one satellite overhead and not use the others that are out there, and is a much better way to place satellites than in four traditional orbits that the DOD uses. So today we are operating a hybrid commercial and military architecture, but that wasn't done deliberately. It's put together over time in a hodgepodge. And speaking of the Defense One event, one of the big takeaways is that the Pentagon is spending way too much money on ground equipment. Everyone thinks satellite services are expensive, but 75% of the wideband enterprise cost resides on the ground, not in space. The user terminals and ground infrastructure is due for changes because we need some common interfaces. Ding, ding. And we've heard that before. We really didn't get a lot into it, but this whole FirstNet rollout network for first responders and 911 providers across the country by AT&T, Camille did all kinds of research on that, and I will link to her Steemit post that she posted her research on. It was very extensive, and she pointed out a very interesting point. They're using a lot of this first responder, and now it looks like military need to roll out these new communication technologies that are going to invade a lot of our private space. They'll be able to surveil, bag, tag, and track from every level. It'll be done, of course, with the need to roll out 5G, and we're going to look at some of that. All right, so let's take another step forward because this story was getting long and boring. Raytheon and DARPA are developing technology to control drone swarms. And I think we touched on one of these stories the other day, but I wanted to bring this back in because drones have now been commercialized and they're being used by the military. They're going to have all kinds of tracking in the air. They are working on some of those systems right now with Verizon was one, and the FAA and some other groups. There were quite a number of corporations that were going to be involved in the whatever they call it, the radar is going to be watching so they don't have mid-air collisions. Raytheon, whose stock is going off the charts, is developing technology for soldiers to control unmanned aerial vehicle swarms with voice and gesture commands. the technology. So it's not just going to be by using your mind, which we read about Emotive doing. Now it can be just by voice commands and gesture. The technology is being developed under the Defense Advanced Research Project Agency's Offensive Swarm-Enabled Tactics Program, more affectionately known as OFFSET. And Raytheon Technologies Division is developing a visual interface that allows for drag and drop creation and manipulation of swarm tactics, which is a game-based simulator to evaluate those tactics, and a physical swarm testbed to perform live tactic evaluation. So these are going to be the seek and destroy, drag and drop video game simulation killer drones. DARPA has also awarded contracts to Northrop Grumman Mission Systems and Lockheed Martin. So no, these aren't going to have any type of explosives or laser weapons on them. Nah. The phase one contracts are part of the program's swarm sprints in an effort to enable rapid development of leveraging and combining emerging swarm technology. And swarm sprints focuses on five key areas: swarm tactics, swarm autonomy, human swarm teaming, which that sounds kind of scary, virtual environment, and physical testbed. Raytheon swarming technology will be applied by DARPA in unmanned systems meant for multiple domains, not just unmanned aerial systems. We imagine seeing swarm tactics while you will be conducting reconnaissance with a swarm of air and ground robots. Oh no! And by identifying ingress and egress points, or perhaps identifying novel ways to construct a perimeter of an area of operations. The United States is playing catch-up in developing swarm technology because, of course, the Chinese are ahead of us. Chinese companies are setting records in unmanned system swarming. In June of 2017, the Chinese Electronics Technology Group Corporation set the record for fixed-wing unmanned aerial vehicles flying 119 systems in a swarm. Then in December of 2017, researchers from the Chinese state-run National University of Defense Technology used more than 24 unmanned aerial vehicles to complete a simulated reconnaissance mission. Also in December 2017, Chinese firm Eng set the world record for the largest swarm ever deployed using 1,180 unmanned aerial vehicles in a performance closing the Global Fortune Forum in Guangzhou. Swarming technology has purportedly already been used in combat. The Russian Ministry of Defense claims its ground forces were attacked by a drone swarm in January of 2018. So what do you think of that? So now let's step this right up, because another story came across my feed. And this was February 28th, 2018. The FCC was voting on infrastructure rule changes to speed up the implementation of 5G networks. Well, of course they were, because this is going to impact our world. The FCC votes in March on as to whether to eliminate certain requirements for building wireless infrastructure to help speed up the development of super fast 5G networks. Republican Commissioner Brendan Carr announced that the agency will vote on whether to effectively exempt smaller transmitters crucial to 5G from reviews related to what? Oh, their environmental and historic preservation impacts. Yeah, don't worry about the environmental impacts. Every 500 feet in your community outside of your kid's bedroom window, they will also limit a permitting process for larger construction projects linked to wireless. So they're going to limit permits. They're going to limit permitting processes. They're going to cut down the red tape. 5G networks require more transmitters and cell sites to be placed on buildings, streets, and other structures, and that would be throughout your environment. And AT&T, Verizon, T-Mobile are all racing to build up 5G networks, as they've been pushing the FCC to speed up its process that it takes to get new infrastructure and equipment approved. So this 5G Internet of Things, all connected back to the satellite Internet of Things, is going to be how they keep tabs on everything that is going on with all of their sensors. So another story, this one was 3 days ago, March 27th, 2018, NVIDIA NVIDIA, we've talked about them many times before. They made graphics cards back in the day, and they really kind of jumped in the forefront of having fast processors that then were repurposed for artificial intelligence to give the machine robot googly eyes and a little bit of extra intelligence. And now NVIDIA's chips are running a lot of the supercomputing projects that are going on around the globe. NVIDIA and ARM take deep learning to the Internet of Things. Oh, how great is that? NVIDIA and ARM announced that they are partnering to bring deep learning to billions of mobile consumer electronic devices in the Internet of Things devices that are anticipated in the future. Billions, people, with a B. Under this partnership, the two chip companies will integrate the open source NVIDIA Deep Learning Accelerator architecture into ARM's Project Trillium platform for machine learning. Yeah, the Trillium. The collaboration will make it simpler for IoT chip companies to integrate AI into their designs and help put intelligent, affordable products into the hands of billions of consumers worldwide. Again, an elevator pitch. Don't get too excited. The Internet of Things aims to make everyday objects smart and connected through processors, sensors, and other electronics. This is a very exciting announcement, says Vice President at NVIDIA, and we can add deep learning architectures to systems. But what's the next step? Well, all the Internet of Things devices that are coming in our future, whether it's a smartphone or a camera, all of those devices will do inferencing. ARM is the largest IoT company in the world, based on NVIDIA's Xavier AI chip, the autonomous machine system on a chip. It is a free open architecture to promote a standard way of designing deep learning accelerators. Accelerating AI at the edge is critical in enabling the IoT vision of connecting a trillion IoT devices worldwide. This should be horrifying to everybody. Today, we are one step closer to that vision by incorporating the NVDLA processor into the ARM Project Trillium platform, as our entire ecosystem will immediately benefit from the expertise and capabilities of our two companies bring in AI and IoT together. The integration of these two projects give deep learning developers high level of performance as they leverage ARM's flexibility and scalability across a wide range of IoT devices. This is a win-win for IoT, mobile, and embedded chip companies looking to design accelerated AI solutions. NVIDIA is the clear leader in AI, and ARM is the leader in IoT, so it makes a lot of sense for them to partner on their intellectual property. And here's another one. This is from the same day. And this was out of NVIDIA's website itself. Robotics Reimagined. NVIDIA releases Isaac software development kit to accelerate creating autonomous machines. So these aren't just going to be autonomous machines. These are going to be autonomous IoT devices that do their own thing and feed back data. And we found out that some of these new communications are going to be two-way, up and downstream, so they can send commands from space. Unveiled at the GPU Technology Conference, and that would be the Graphical Processing Unit, by NVIDIA co-founder Jensen Huang, the Isaac Software Development Kit is a collection of libraries, drivers, and application programming interfaces, as well as other tools. This SDK will save manufacturers, researchers, startups, and developers hundreds of hours by making it easy to add AI into the next generation of robots for perception, navigation, and manipulation. It also provides a framework to manage communications and transfer data within the robot architecture, and it makes it easy to add sensors, manage sensor data, and control actuators in real time. So they could turn your home helper robot into a killer, which is one zippity zap. Part of the SDK is Isaac Sim, and that is a simulation environment for developing, testing, and training autonomous machines in the virtual world, right? Because then they can teach themselves. And the algorithms trained in a simulation are then deployed to NVIDIA Jetson, for AI computing at the edge, bringing robots to life. NVIDIA also showed off the first reference design based on their Isaac SDK for its handy ability to cart around objects. And the delivery robot is on site this week at the NVIDIA booth at the GTC's exhibition hall. So that must have been going on this week. The robotics field presents nearly unlimited opportunities. And this is one of the things I'm going to bring up. This isn't just going to be tin can robots roaming around your house, but remember we looked a lot at some of these nano-sized robots that they are building and able to turn DNA utilizing origami into little optical voltage sensing nano devices. And these things are small enough to get inside the human body. And if we have time, and it looks like we're actually going to get back there today. The Isaac Sim is tightly coupled to the tools and the framework presented in the Isaac SDK, enabling a seamless transfer of data and algorithms to and from the physical robot, which is really freaky, which is vital for accelerating robot development at warp speed. Exactly what we want. The Jetson combined with the Isaac SDK and the Isaac Sim makes NVIDIA's Isaac platform ideal for developing and deploying robotic applications in manufacturing, logistics, delivery, agriculture, service, construction, inspection, and other areas. And I wonder if they're going to utilize, if maybe Jetson is something like that learning in the cloud that we looked at with that Baxter robot, where they can code new things, put it up there, make it available for everyone else who has the product. So this one was from yesterday out of militaryaerospace.com. DARPA eyes new sensors for urban monitoring. And we've talked about urban monitoring in the past in regards to biosensing for watching for bioterror attacks after the anthrax attacks that occurred after 9/11. Well, this takes it the next step further. U.S. military researchers are approaching industry for new kinds of cooperating sensors. What is a cooperating sensor? To improve urban sensing capabilities for monitoring city traffic flow, crowd management, public safety monitoring, resource use, and environmental protection. Sounds to me like they are jumping on the smart city bandwagon. That's what the smart city is going to be. It's not going to be for sustainability like they're trying to sell all this nano sensor technology as going to save the planet. It's going to keep you safe. It's going to bag, tag, and track every centimeter of your environment and feed it back to a dashboard where someone, probably a big pulsating brain in the sky, will be keeping track of it and letting others know whether or not everything is operating within parameters. Officials at the U.S. Defense Advanced Research Project Agency, of course, in Arlington, Virginia, issued a request for information, more affectionately known as an RFI, last week. And that was DARPA-SN-18-44 on a new urban sensing technology. Responses could support future DARPA programs to improve urban sensing capabilities. From industry, DARPA researchers are interested in sensing capabilities, sensor packaging, unique and enabling sensor technologies, sensor technology maturity levels, concepts of operation, and system affordability to support urban sensing. Something like smart dust would probably do. Of particular interest are low-cost miniaturized sensors, ding ding, and sensor packaging designs with technology maturity levels that could support field experimentations within the next 1 to 2 years. Sensor technologies should have extended operation durations involving visual, acoustic, optical, radio frequency, pressure, spectrum, and polarization sensors to capture previously untapped properties and characteristics of urban elements, including crowds, pedestrians, objects, and activities. Guys, that sure sounds like smart dust to me. The advancement of embedded technologies is driving rapid growth of sensing technologies that can yield data from citywide deployments for monitoring, modeling, and understanding urban activities. Right, so if they have to go in and perform some sort of urban warfare that they have been perfecting in cities in the Middle East, they'll be able to do that and know if someone is hiding around a corner or has explosives in their pocket. DARPA would like responses from companies, universities, nonprofit research centers, U.S. government laboratories, foreign entities, and individuals. Responses should involve technologies at least as mature as component and breadboard validation in the laboratory. Then it goes on and on and on with all of the tag listings for the types of things that they're looking for. So here's another one. March 27th, 2018. First that I've seen a demonstration of this. There's actually a little video in here that's demonstrating it. One of the smartest tunnels ever built. New video explains how technology will keep Seattle drivers safe. Seattle and a smart tunnel. Leave it to high-tech city above ground to build a high-tech roadway underground. Seattle's SR99 tunnel project has a number of noteworthy engineering and construction milestones, but as crews work to wrap everything up, the Washington State Department of Transportation revealed on Tuesday how much work remains on their smart system and the operational and safety role that all of that technology will play. Right, it'll keep you safe. Earlier this month, Seattle Tunnel Partners completed work on a double-deck highway, and workers installed the last of 1,152 road panels that locked together to form a lower northbound roadway. But there is still much work to be done to install and test the equipment that will ensure the safety of the drivers who use the two-mile route. And they shared some details in a new blog post and a video which explains how ventilation and fire suppression systems will work. More than 300 cameras will monitor traffic and security at all times as part of the incident detection program. Automatic ventilation systems are designed to keep the air quality and the visibility high, and automated sprinkler systems are designed to put out a fire quickly at its source. After years of watching Bertha, which is the giant tunnel machine that bores, churn beneath the city and decaying Alaskan Way Viaduct, more numbers attached to the project show just how far we've come. They have put in 95 miles of electrical wiring, 21 miles of sprinkler pipes, 15 miles of lights, 13 miles of fiber optic cabling, and 8 miles of linear heat detectors. They say that thousands of components will be needed to be tested at least 3 times, once to make sure they work, then to make sure they work as a system, then together with other systems to make sure that all systems are integrated and functional. Once they give the go-ahead, they will hand the project over to a different contractor to align the existing SR99 and build a final wrap connection to the tunnel. The agency estimates the traffic could be flowing in the tunnel as early as this fall. And smart tunnels are in our future, people. Smart roadways, smart buildings, smart bathrooms. It's all going to be about bagging, tagging, and tracking. So now let's get to some of the sensors. This one caught my attention at the beginning of this week. Scientists, this is out of ScienceDaily.com, March 22nd, 2018. Scientists develop tiny tooth-mounted sensors that can track what you eat. Now remember, one of the big pushes into the Internet of Things is going to be in the healthcare marketplace and getting these little tiny nano sensors into you somehow to be able to pull biostatistics. Wireless real-time monitoring could add precision to the linkage between diet and your health. Engineers have developed miniaturized sensors that, when mounted directly on a tooth and communicating wirelessly with a mobile device, can transmit information on your glucose, salt, and alcohol intake. Oh no! Researchers note that future adaptations of these sensors could enable the detection and the recording of a wide range of nutrients, chemicals, and physiological states. Monitoring in real time is what happens in and around our bodies. Monitoring in real time what happens in and around our bodies can be invaluable in the context of healthcare or clinical studies, but not so easy to do. That could soon change thanks to a new government mandated, no, it doesn't say that, but it could be someday, new miniaturized sensors developed by researchers at Tufts University School of Engineering that, when mounted directly on a tooth and communicating wirelessly with a mobile device, can transmit information on glucose, salt, and alcohol intake. Researchers, the research to be published soon in the Journal of Advanced Materials. Researchers note that future adaptations of these sensors could enable a detection and recording of a wide range of things. Previous wearable devices for monitoring dietary intake suffered from limitations such as requiring the use of a mouth guard, bulky wiring, or necessitating frequent replacements as the sensors rapidly degraded. Tufts engineers sought a more adaptable technology and developed a sensor with a mere 2 millimeter by 2 millimeter footprint that can flexibly conform and bond to the irregular surface of a tooth. In a similar fashion to the way a toll is collected on a highway, the sensor transmits its data wirelessly in response to an incoming radio frequency signal. The sensors are made up of three sandwich layers, a chemical bioresponsive layer that absorbs the nutrient or other chemicals detected, and then outer layers consisting of a two squares shaped gold ring, and together with three layers, they act like a tiny antenna on your tooth, collecting and transmitting waves in the radio frequency spectrum. And as the incoming wave hits the sensor, some of it is canceled out and the rest is transmitted back, just like a patch of blue paint absorbs the redder wavelengths and then reflects the blue back to our eyes. The sensor, however, can change its color. For example, if the central layer takes on salt or ethanol, its electrical properties will shift, causing the sensor to absorb and transmit different spectrums of radio frequency with varying intensity. That's how nutrients and other analytes can be detected and measured. In theory, we can modify the bioresponsive layers in these sensors to target other chemicals. Oh no! And we can really limit... We are only limited by our creativity. That's what I've been saying for a very long time. We have extended common RFID technology to a sensor package that can dynamically read and transmit information on its environment, whether it's affixed to a tooth, the skin, or any other surface. So what do you think of them apples? Well, it gets even better. Creation of sensors in our environments. Bagging, tagging, and tracking from every region of the planet. Well, DARPA, this was released yesterday. DARPA says that it wants to weaponize sea creatures to spy on enemy submarines. Oh, yes. It's got a little picture of a dolphin with a machine gun and a military hard hat on. When it comes to military secrets, it is often said that loose lips sink ships. Well, now that phrase must evolve. If the U.S. military has its way, then loose-lipped fish will start seeking submarines. America's Defense Advanced Research Project Agency, more affectionately known as DARPA, has announced a new plan that involves hijacking the senses of various aquatic life forms in order to keep better tabs on what happens in the water surrounding the U.S. and her allies. The plan is to try and create some sort of equipment that can sense fish and their movements, the logic being that these animals will be able to spot strange, mysterious submarines moving in the water a lot easier than any man-made technology like their drone swarms they already have underwater. According to DARPA, the ideal solution would be to find a way to tap directly into unaltered marine life forms. But if this doesn't work, they are not above some old-fashioned genetic experimentation, oh no, to try to create a super spy fish, a real-life James Bond, if you will, that would be able to report back to headquarters about the various anomalies that might be invading the oceans. DARPA is also eager to clarify that any genetically altered fish would be tested thoroughly in its control facilities, of course it will, before being allowed into the ocean, and nobody is interested in kicking off a mutant genius fish apocalypse. Well, let's hope not. Presumably, they won't start by making sharks super smart, but then you can never tell with DARPA. And according to the program manager, Lori Adornato, the persistent Aquatic Living Sensors, more affectionately known as PALS program, offers a lot of advantages, providing scientists with a way where they can read fish's minds from a distance. Oh, God. It never ceases to amaze me. The U.S. Navy's current approach to detecting and monitoring underwater vehicles is a hardware-centric and resource-intensive, and as a result, the capability is mostly used at a tactical level to protect high-valued assets like aircraft carriers, and less so at the border strategic, at the broader strategic level. If we can tap into the innate sensing capabilities of living organisms that are ubiquitous in the oceans, we can extend our ability to track adversarial activity and do so discreetly on a persistent basis with enough precision to characterize the size and the type of the adversary's vehicle. This plan sounds very similar to a recently announced DARPA project that will attempt to use plant life as spies. And we read about that one, the spying spinach, around noteworthy secret military installations by planting audio receptive plants around places of note. And the military will be able to spot if someone unexpected is lurking in the trees. And of course, one has to wonder why DARPA would be so eager to announce their plans for a flora and a fauna-based espionage when their projects are just in their infancy. As with seemingly ridiculous schemes that China is working on, it does seem like it makes sense to try and keep these projects secret so the potential enemies are unaware of the full technological might that the military possesses, especially when it comes to formulating invasion plans or covert spy missions. On the one hand, if you learn to communicate with sea creatures and you want the street cred that comes from announcing your achievement far and wide, more likely, though, it is that DARPA's gonzo announcements are masking other research projects, and if the military can convince its enemies that even the fish are on our side, they may not think too hard about what else DARPA might be developing to deploy in the sea. Perhaps we should all be on the lookout for super smart robot sharks with jetpacks after all. That was pretty funny. All right, so now on Wednesday, I believe, we read a story out of Mashable titled IBM Unveils the World's Smallest Computer with Blockchain at Think 2018. We found out that this new little micro sensor will be the size of a grain of sand, and it will be able to think and do AI and put things on the blockchain. We also found out, we mentioned this one earlier today, that they are now working on DNA origami as a novel avenue for creating next generation optical voltage sensing nano devices. Well, there's another one out of the University of Virginia, which happens to be right next door, or very near. Actually, I don't know if it's right next door. It's in the same city as DARPA. Researchers received DARPA funding to shrink computer memory. In the case of Smaller is Better, a team at the University of Virginia has received a $3.4 million grant from, of course, the Defense Advanced Research Project Agency, with the goal to shrink computer memory bits to a nano scale. Using tiny magnetic structures called skimmerons, researchers hope to reduce the amount of energy needed to move memory and expand memory capabilities in the same amount of space. The University of Virginia team consists of some really smart people. And other co-principal investigators include some other really smart people. And the program kicked off earlier this month in March. With recent engineering developments, solid-state computing systems have the potential to overcome limits faced by present electronic memory, digital logic, and sensors. The engineers seek to employ skimmerons, which are objects in a magnet, where the magnetic direction reverses itself spatially from inside and out, and blah, blah, blah. We really don't care how skimmerons work. Just know that they are going to be able to add large amounts of memory storage to some of these nano DNA robots that might even be able to be controlled from the sky. All right, here's another one. March 29th, yesterday, it caught my attention because of the little picture of the little mousie with this tiny little nano QB device with a tiny little nano probe stuck into his tiny little brain. Titled Tiny, and they really do use that word. This is out of nanotech.org. March 29, 2018, tiny intracortical probes monitor neural activity. nano-fabricated, ultra-flexible electrode arrays that have a cross-sectional area that is much smaller than a conventional carbon fiber electrode could be used to detect action potential from individual neurons without damaging brain tissue. Well, phew, good thing they came up with that one. The devices could allow for high-density electrical recoding, of neural activity in a living brain, as well as being useful in the field of brain-machine interfacing. This almost sounds like neural dust motes that we've read about before, but now at a capability of not doing any type of brain damage. Implanted neural probes are currently the only way to monitor the fast electrophysiological activity of individual neurons. And such probes have been successfully employed to treat a number of neurological diseases, such as Parkinson's. We found out on Wednesday that they're using Parkinson's patients to do a lot of this research right now because they already have probes implanted in their brain, and they can be used to establish a direct communication between the brain and a man-made interface. The problem is that these probes are typically much larger in size than neurons and capillaries, and thus they can cause significant damage to brain tissue when implanted. A team of researchers led by Chong Zi of the University of Texas at Austin has now developed new ultra-flexible intracortical probes that are 10 times smaller than conventional carbon fiber electrodes, which have a cross-sectional area that is 100 times smaller. This advance is, in our opinion, a crucial step toward high-density, full-coverage mapping of neural activity in a sizable brain region. It could also prove very useful in the field of brain-machine interfacing. Well, yippee! Researchers use state-of-the-art electron beam lithography and photolithography techniques to fabricate nano-electrical threads. So that's the first time I've seen nano-electrical threads. So that's even smaller than nanowires. And these are probes containing densely packed electrode arrays. They made the devices on 100-millimeter silicon wafers containing a sacrificial layer of thin nickel. And after releasing the sacrificial layer, we are then able to harvest substrate-less small-sized probes with a multi-layer layout that markedly reduces the cross-sectional area to the subcellular range. One such probe hosted a linear array of electrodes with a cross-section profile of 0.8, I don't know, angstroms, I think, UM, which is the smallest among all reported to our knowledge. One of the probes was designed to function as a multiple tetrode, hosting a group of four closely spaced electrodes every 100 angstroms along the thread, he adds, and it was fabricated so that each of its electrode spacing was smaller than its detection range to allow for spatial oversampling, which improves spatial resolution of action potential signal recording. So meaning it's very high density and very accurate. The researchers tested out their device on a mouse and found that the electrodes can record action and local field potentials of neurons with a very high signal-to-noise, with high signal-to-noise ratios. And compared to conventional neural probes, the much reduced dimensions allows us to implant the devices at previously unattainable high densities. They'll be sprinkling it all about without damage to brain tissue. In this work, we could implant the probes to a depth of between 500 and 700 angstroms in a somasensory cortex. We've demonstrated implantation at an interprobe distance of 60, but again, without eliciting neuronal death. So that's all good. So now we are planning to extend its test to primates. We also plan to collaborate with other professionals to broaden its use of our probes to such fields such as monitoring neuronal diseases and other fundamental studies. Well, listen to this. Elon Musk comes out talking about space. Remember, he's been working on this whole Neuralink project as well. Elon Musk's brain implant startup, which would be Neuralink, reportedly is now planning to test on animals. It is seeking regulatory approval for its planned use of office space in San Francisco, and a Neuralink employee says that the company was looking to house rodents and conduct operations for in vivo testing. Elon Musk has said that Neuralink will initially focus on providing brain implants to people with disabilities, but he has not talked about testing on animals. Neuralink, a company founded by Elon Musk that aims to develop brain implants for boosting people's mental capabilities, had plans to test products on animals, according to a new report. The new information provides rare insight into Neuralink's earliest plans for executing his bold vision, which could ultimately diversify Musk beyond cars with Tesla and space travel with SpaceX. The report on Wednesday from Gizmodo points to a letter Neuralink employee Jared Burchell sent to a San Francisco city department last year that mentions plans for a small operating room, for in vivo testing and a small room to house rodents. Musk has not spoken much about Neuralink in the past, but has said before that the company would seek to deploy its technology for a wider population, which could be 7 to 9 years away, and that Neuralink would first try to help people with certain kinds of disabilities. The first use of this technology is to repair brain injuries as a result of stroke, or cutting out a cancerous lesion where somebody fundamentally loses a certain cognitive element. It could help people who are quadriplegics or paraplegics by providing a neural shunt from the motor cortex down to where the muscles are activated, and it could also help people who, as they get older, have memory problems and can't remember the names of their kids, or through memory enhancement, which could allow them to function well much later into life. The medically advantageous elements of this for dealing with mental disablement of one kind or another, which of course happens to all of us when we get old enough, are very significant. We read a story last week, or maybe it was even this week, about DARPA working on an implant that they were talking about being able to restore memories to Alzheimer's patients and be able to do a feedback loop to strengthen those memories that they've recorded. Based on conversations with Musk, he did not touch on animal testing, but the letter from Burchell noted that the company was looking to abide by law with its research efforts. This will allow the Animal Biosafety Laboratory Level 1, and the use of rodents is exempt from the Animal Welfare Act, which is really horrible to know. The Gizmodo report says that an architect subsequently told the city that the company was looking outside of San Francisco to set up a lab, and that Neuralink had begun sponsoring research at the University of California, Davis. Oh, that's not surprising. That's another mad science lab where they do lots of different crazy things, including CRISPR research and genetically modifying cows and things of that nature. But ultimately, Neuralink did receive approval from the California State Public Health Department to keep and use its animals at its San Francisco headquarters. It is not certain that animal testing has begun, though Neuralink did not immediately respond to a request for comment. So now to move on to a little more brain-related, but back to DARPA this time. We aired an encore the other day. This was on Thursday, I think, titled Military Industrial Complex, Space and Suspended Animation. We took a look at some of the plans that they've been talking about with suspended animation and extended space travel, being able to slow down the body and the metabolic processes within the body to extend the time that you might be alive. Gabby Giffords was one of the people that they experimented on with that procedure, and it also mentioned a Buffalo Bill who had gotten a traumatic head injury that they did that with, where they cooled them down with a saline solution so that the brain would not require as much oxygen. Well, listen to this. DARPA has now announced, and this was yesterday, March 29, 2018, DARPA wants to slow life to save life with a program that extends the quote-unquote golden hour. When troops are wounded, time is precious, and this is out of MarineCorpChimes.com. When troops are wounded, time is precious, and that is why the fast-ticking minutes that follow such an event are called the golden hour. Get the right care within the right time and you survive. Get the wrong care or an evac takes too long and you are dead. And while major efforts across the government push to advance medical technology in the field and speed up the vehicles that carry troops for top treatment, one new effort is trying something even more ambitious, and that is slowing life to save life. Researchers at the Defense Advanced Research Project Agency, more affectionately known as DARPA, recently launched a five-year project dubbed Biostasis. Oh, what a good name. The program will, quote, leverage molecular biology to develop innovative ways of controlling the speed at which living systems operate. So maybe this is part of their biological control program. Who knows? But it seems a little bit interesting that they are touching on this now. So they want a way of controlling the speed at which living systems operate. And by doing that, they hope to extend the golden hour before it is too late. Well, how about even speeding up the golden hour? At a molecular level, life is a set of continuous biochemical reactions. And a defining characteristic of these reactions is that they need a catalyst to occur at all. Those catalysts are proteins and large molecular machines that transform chemical and kinetic energy into biological processes. Our goal with biostasis is to control those molecular machines, and that is one of the things that Eric Drexler talked about, molecular machines and nanotechnology, and to get them all to slow their roll down at about the same rate so we can slow down the entire system gracefully. Should be a graceful shutdown, and avoid adverse consequences when the intervention is reversed and wears off. The program starts small, first aiming at slowing certain processes within cells, and then slowing whole cells, and then later tissue processes, and then onto the entire organism. Oh, this is horrifying. But the goal isn't simply to slow down processes, but to do it without damaging the processes when they return to a normal speed. Of course it is. Our treatments need to hit every cellular process at the close and very same rate. And with the same potency and efficacy, we can't focus treatments to interrupt just a subset of a known critical processes, because the wrong kind of slowdown in the wrong sequence or at different rates could kill a cell. Right, double-edged sword always is. So to avoid these problems, DARPA wants to put their efforts on the protein level, and this might be a good place to pick up artificial protein synthesis next week, Wednesday, and they're looking to nature for some clues. The certain creatures such as tardigrades that live for millions of years and can even live in space, as well as wood frogs, can go into a state known as cryptobiosis, where it seems like all of their metabolic processes have stopped, but they are still alive. Tardigrades, which are microscopic invertebrates, can use this adaptation to survive freezing and extreme radiation. All right.